Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 403 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 16th of November, 2018, as I record this. So today I'm talking about how to scale your author business with Joseph Alexander, who is known for his books on playing the guitar. And Joseph's been on the show before talking more about that sort of print side. And we get a bit into that today. We also talk about working with a team and letting go of control, which is definitely something I still find difficult. Also working with translators, burnout and mindset stuff. And I think you're definitely going to find today's discussion interesting. Right. So in publishing news today, I'm going to attempt to round up what has been a tumultuous few months with Amazon. And the changes are coming thick and fast. And I certainly hit, you know, normally I'm quite a even-tempered. I think I'm quite even-tempered. And when I start getting angry, that means that something's wrong. And so I really had a moment this week where I was like, okay, let's take a step back and try to figure out what's going on. Because, and I've mentioned quite a few of these things, you're probably aware of some of these things, maybe not all of them, but these are some of the things that we've seen in the last couple of months. So CreateSpace merged into KDP Print, which has caused a lot of problems, and authors are still having issues with various books. And so that was one big change. And I know some people are still coming to terms with that. And I think Ingram Spark has probably got a lot of business based on people just being annoyed with it. I'm glad I moved early. And of course, if you listen to the show, I told you to move early. So there you go. The second thing was the disappearance of visible also boughts on the Amazon.com store, which still not everyone is seeing, but I certainly have seen it on all my books and is becoming more widespread. This is a, when this happened, I was like, oh, this is never going to last. It must just be a A-B test or whatever. But it has continued now for 3 months, September, October, November. So, and as we get into it, I think this is probably continuing to roll out. And so these are visible also bots. So the also bot algorithm and data and all of that is all still there in the background. It's just you can't see them on some books now. And when you shop, you see this line of ads. Then last week, what actually broke me for once is the separate country stores. So there's a couple of things about this. Amazon has released a new beta report site, and you'll see if you get access to that. If you just, when you're in your KDP dashboard, if you click, well, at the top, I just had a link at the top, which was like, try our new beta reporting. And that splits it out by country, which is very new. And also, if you kind of hover your cursor over on your KDP dashboard, you can go into a place which shows whether or not your books are available. Similar, if you publish direct to Apple, you can see the status of your books on 52 different stores. It's the same type of look. So I think, so there was so much discussion of this because 16 of my books disappeared in inverted commas from the .com store. And the week before this had been happening and I'd heard about it. And so the fix was supposedly just to republish your books. So I spent probably 5 hours or so republishing a lot of my books and it didn't work. So that's when I kind of hit my wall of, right, what is going on? Lots of international authors complaining about this, and they were saying lots of different things. So there's still been no official word on this, but what it looks like to me, and I'm going to link to David Cochran's post about it so you can see all the screen prints and everything, but essentially there's one issue if you can't see the books, but there's another issue if you can't buy the books. And there are a lot of international readers who have been buying Kindle books on Amazon.com for many years, and it looks like that is possibly now not possible because of all these new stores. Now, again, as this has developed over the week and still no official word, so this is just me thinking about it. Before I move on there, the other changes is that categories have been changed in some instances. And also many authors have reported a drop in income since September. Some reported between 25 to 40% reduction in sales. So all of this together is really interesting to me. And then an article in The Economist talked about Amazon's ambitious drive into digital advertising. And again, I will link to all of these different things in the show notes, which you can always find at thecreativepen.com/podcast. But this article put everything together for me. It's like, oh, this is what's happening. And again, this is what I think is happening. This is certainly what The Economist thinks is happening. So the headline is Amazon's ambitious drive into digital advertising. Building a big ad business will help to keep the firm expanding. Amazon currently has 4% of an American market worth $111 billion, compared to Google's 37% and Facebook's 21%. So, of course, Google and Facebook's revenue is built on ads. And when I think when Amazon decides to take a chunk of an industry, they really go for it. And of course, we've seen that in many ways. If they have 4% of an ad market against Google's 37, Facebook's 21, they are going to want to take some of that market share. Also quoting from The Economist, despite trailing far behind the leaders, Amazon ads are having an outsized effect on the company. Its revenues from ad sales could hit $8 billion in 2018, contributing $3 billion in operating profit, a quarter of the total. There's a quote saying that by 2021, it's highly likely that profits from Amazon's ad business will exceed those from its lucrative cloud computing unit, Amazon Web Services. Also allowing advertising on Alexa, the voice assistant, and the smart speakers is another possibility. So this article and mainly that market share difference made me think, okay, what has happened is what happened with Facebook a couple of years ago when we went from just putting things on Facebook into Facebook pages and them reaching people to a shift to pay to play. And you used to be able to put up a post on Facebook and then everyone would see it. Now you have to pay to boost or you have to do Facebook ads. And you used to be able to put your book on Amazon and pretty much if you went into KU or you priced it free or you did a 99-cent deal or a countdown or any of those things, it would sell a few copies. But I think that what we've seen in the last couple of months in September is that has changed. And I really hesitate to say this because I was talking to Jonathan, my husband, and just saying, whoa, you know, this could be more fundamental than a Kindle Unlimited, but it combining subscriptions and what I think will be digital to zero in a few years, combining that with paid ads, this is very interesting new market. So I've gone from being angry this week to really looking at why I was angry. And I came down, and perhaps you're angry too. Also, someone put a comment on my blog about being angry. They said that they had been told self-publishing was easy and you could just put out a book and you would make money. And I don't think I've ever said that. I certainly have never experienced that myself. I have always done marketing since day one. In fact, when I published my first book and it sat in my house back in 2008, the reason I learned marketing was because no one was buying my book. So I don't think anything's changed in the overarching methodology of what it takes to be a successful author who sells books, whether you're traditionally published or an indie. What has changed is the expectation that we got into. We got into this expectation that certain things would work. So, for example, someone said to me the other day, oh, I thought all you did was just a BookBub ad. And I was like, I actually think just a BookBub ad stopped working a while ago. I mean, again, right at the beginning of BookBub, you could put one on and you would make three times your revenue back. But now you have to use the ad stacking approach, which I talked about in 2016. And certainly Mark Dawson and other people have talked about that for a longer time. So I think, as ever, my take on this whole situation is about your approach and your learning and your decisions about your books and what you want to do with your time. So I came back to you this week, the idea of locus of control, which is you can't, and I think also the political environment, we've had a few Brexit things going on here in the UK. You've also had a lot of stuff in America. You've got lots of talk about the climate change stuff. And these are big, big issues which you often feel like you can't control. And the idea of this locus of control is like you're in the middle, you can control you as much as possible. I mean, again, like your health goes wrong and all of this, but you can at least control your response to the situation. See, when I got angry, it was because it felt like this was out of my control. I felt like, oh my goodness, this is really changing what I thought the game was. And I wasn't finding it very fun. But then I thought, okay, locus of control, what can I control? And I want you to think that too. And this is part of the reason I went independent in the first place and why I continue to enjoy being indie is I can control what I do next. And so I think, as ever, that yes, you have to learn to do some marketing. And yes, you have to protect your income by going wide. I have said that for years. But what can you do? And actually, it doesn't really change what I'm doing anyway. So for example, I have you guys, I have the podcast, which is nearly 10 years old. I have the blog, which is 10 years old. I have a content marketing site for my nonfiction books that will drive sales regardless of ads. And in fact, many of you probably buy my books by going onto Amazon and searching Joanna Penn and finding my books there. But what I want to do with my fiction, as I've talked about, is build a new content marketing site for fiction. And if you have bought my course, you will know a bit more about that. And you can find that at thecreativepen.com/learn. So I am definitely doubling down on content marketing for fiction for long-term sales to protect my career and build loyalty for JF Penn in the same way that I have done successfully for Joanna Penn in the last 10 years. By building content marketing, you are not reliant on paying for traffic. And that's where I want to get to. However, and this was my change of attitude, my thought was, okay, I'm going to build this stuff for the long term. But do you know what? I also need to keep my short term sales going. And I, like everyone else, I've had quite a significant drop as well in the last few months. So what I'm doing is, yes, I'm building my content marketing and continuing with the podcast, continuing with the blog on the Creative Pen, also building up a new site for fiction. And I'm getting more serious about Amazon ads for short-term sales and protecting my brand on the biggest, bookstore in the world type of thing. I'm not, this certainly does not make me want to get into KU. It doesn't, you know, it makes me more serious about getting my books into, you know, being a good publisher, as I talked about last week. So I am doing the large print, doing the audio, doing the hardback editions, so that my inventory is really well managed, and then looking at expanding the ad stuff. And part of this, really just a few things have come together for me this week and feeling like, okay, so I think what's going to happen in 2019 is I think this will be a ripple because people are really just starting to notice this now and authors are talking about falling sales. I think many people have been keeping quiet about it, but it's starting to be talked about on many of the groups. And if you think about it from a bigger perspective, from a traditional publishing perspective, I mentioned some of Mike Shatskin's posts last week. I think this feeds into it. If you think big picture, traditional publishing with the slowdown in physical retail and difficulties with physical bookstores and the need to sell books online, if publishers are not getting to grips with this type of advertising, and they certainly took long enough to get into it for Facebook. And when I see a lot of Amazon ads by indies and very few from traditional publishers at the moment. And in fact, I think when they do some marketing, they're going, well, some ads, they're going to put the money into the big sellers. So I just was just looking in the UK store this morning, and they're advertising David Walliams, who is probably the biggest children's book seller in the UK, author. And he's on every single page. Like, he was on my page on Joanna Penn. So they might just be throwing money at David Walliams. So that's really interesting. But are they going to spend money on ads for authors who get a no advance digital only deal? I just don't think they will. So I think we're going to see in 2019 a bit what happened with the Facebook move, which was if you don't get into this, then your reach is severely curtailed. It's a very interesting play. And of course, that's why building your own platform is so important, and why I'm doing that for my fiction as well as my nonfiction. I also see a couple of other things coming in 2019. The split into the multiple stores, I think, is not just an ad thing. I think it's also digital VAT. So, and I've heard some other people in the indie sphere talk about this as if it's just an EU thing, but it's not. There's digital VAT on other countries as well. I think that as governments realise they can make more money from digital sales, they are going to do more of this. So I think Amazon's need to split the stores also is related to an advance of sales tax on digital goods, and also the copyright directives, which are coming into play in 2019 to 2021. That is EU copyright reform, but that may well spill into other spheres. So I think there are a number of shifts coming into play that are related to the advertising revenue and the change in the way governments are seeing digital sales. Really interesting times, creatives. And all of that to say, as ever, my role, I hope, and why you listen to me, is to give you a heads up over things, to hopefully, well, to share my journey, because this is my full-time living, and my income is down this year. So I need to do things and to protect my long-term business. I am not going back to a day job. No way. So I am looking to my next 5 years, my next 10 years, as well as my short-term revenue. But also, again, this doesn't change what I keep saying, which is, think about the long-term, think about writing more books, some great books that readers love, building your audience, building your email list. None of that changes at all. Okay, I do have, last night, as I record this, Mark Dawson did a really, really good webinar on Amazon ads for short-term sales. And this is only up for a couple of days. So only if you're listening to the podcast at the time it goes out will it actually help. But thecreativepen.com/ad replay, ADREPLAY, so ad replay. You can watch that up until around the 25th of November 2018. And of course, I do webinars with Mark every, probably 3 times a year on ads. And every time I learn something, and this time I was like, this ties in with what I'm feeling around things changing. So hence, taking it more seriously. And to be fair, although I'm an early adopter in terms of thinking about things, I often, when it comes to these more technical developments in advertising, like Facebook ads, I really waited until it was pay to play before I got into it. And probably the same this time. So there you go. That's what's happening in there. I hope that's useful. Please do leave a comment on the blog, on the podcast show notes for this show. You can always go to thecreativepen.com/podcast. This is episode 403. Leave a message on, do a comment if you have some thoughts on this, or you can tweet me at thecreativepen. And I hope, you know, we're going to muddle through this together, guys. We absolutely are. I am more positive. I think when things shake up, that's when you take things seriously. And yeah, I hope that helps. I guess I should also say I could be completely wrong on all of this because there has been no announcement of any of this stuff from Amazon. It has all been through people talking about it, blogging about it, my own experience, The Economist article, what people like Mark are finding with ads, that type of thing. So yeah, just putting that caveat in. Love to hear what you think. Okay, so my personal update, I guess this week has, as I said, this week's been challenging for me. I really have had to face up to some big changes, and I feel much better now. I feel there's been some personal stuff too, and I feel like I've had one of those weeks. Also, towards the end of the year, I start feeling like, okay, let's get into 2019 already. But I have had, when I get, you know, a bit crazy, the best thing to do is to go and write. So I have been working on the next Matt Walker book and revisiting my cartography research, which is really fun, reading some books, just delving into that side of my brain to keep myself sane. But we leave for New Zealand in 3 weeks. So I am also prepping a lot of the blog and the podcast in advance and doing a lot of my year end stuff. So when we're in New Zealand and Australia, I don't have to work all the time. And if you are not a regular listener to the show, my husband's family is in New Zealand and Australia. So it's one of those big family trips, lots of 70th birthdays and family time. So not so much a holiday as a family visit, but I hope to have some sun as well. Also, yeah, I'm still working on the backlist into hardback, large print, and updating all my ebook files. And yeah, really just trying to, as I said last week, be a better publisher around my books. And I'm also working on the business plan for my fiction content site, which I'll talk about more next year. Oh, I should also say I did have a really interesting moment this week. I'm still doing the narration, the fiction narration, and have been doing coaching. And this week I had my coaching session, and then I was re-recording a piece. And I had a moment where I got into the mode of a storyteller. And it was funny kind of even thinking about it now. It was fun. I had fun. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is the character. I really got into a character. I felt the emotion of the piece. And I suddenly went from being a narrator into probably a tiny glimpse of maybe what an actor might feel. And that has made me very hopeful. The other week I was like, oh, I'm not going to do this. And now I'm back to thinking, I'm definitely going to do this. So we shall see. I go back and forwards on it. Right. Thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments from last week's solo show. Several people said they put the quote on the wall, or they printed it out or written it down. And that quote was, people don't buy books, they buy entertainment, information, or inspiration. So Christine said she put it on the wall. Alison said she actually had to pause the podcast to write down the quote. Reinforces what I've been learning from Christine Catherine Rush's branding book. And of course, Chris was on the show a couple of months ago talking about that branding book. And that's that long-term, the long-term stuff you do to build your author brand. So yeah, I'm glad you guys find that useful. Also, thanks to Tom, who emailed to say, I thought you might be interested to know I found the ebook version of your book Desecration in the Nashville, Tennessee library system, already checked out. It's there through Overdrive. And of course, I'm on Overdrive through Kobo Writing Life, because Kobo is a sister company with Overdrive, because Rakuten, who owns both companies, is there. You can get to Overdrive through other platforms, but I'm certainly there through Kobo. So that's pretty cool to know that Nashville, Tennessee has my books. K.A. Bryant says, I spent the last 2 days listening to your interviews back to back and I've learned so much. Glad you're finding it useful, K.A. And always more to listen to. And Lindsay Barocca listening to the show, driving from Arizona to NV. I guess that's Nevada. Next stop, Oregon. Or maybe farther north in Nevada. which is lovely. And then Kirsten Lillis, just caught up on the last two episodes on my way to and from Boulder, Colorado. Timely info since I'm finalizing edits with my editor. Took the photo. Oh, she sent a lovely photo of beautiful blue sky and mountains in Boulder. And I've been there and it is lovely. And then finally, HM Braverman on Twitter said, listening to the podcast was feeling a bit confused about your advice not to start focusing on marketing until your book has been written. A lot of advice says start building a platform as early as possible. Is that different from marketing? And again, I thought I would mention this now because I've just spent like 20 minutes talking about other forms of marketing. So last week's show was learn the things you need to learn at the point that you need them on the journey. So and building a platform, the kind of that really is building an email list, you know, having a website, doing things like a podcast and a blog and videos and content marketing is the traditional form of what building a platform is. But of course, you can, another model might be just putting your books up in KU and doing ads, or going wide and doing ads. And, you know, building a platform is a long term thing. So when it says as early as possible, I really think it just depends what you're writing, what your goals are, how clear you are on what you're doing. So, for example, I started The Creative Pen, 9 months after my first nonfiction book came out, but 2 years after, it was another 2 years before I started writing fiction. I only started my own fiction site when I used another name in around 2014, I think it was. I started JF Pen. So, look, it really just depends on where you are. There are no rules, people. The only rule is, I guess, yeah, you have to write something and you have to publish it in some form and you have to do some marketing. The actual individual whys and hows and of each of those things is really up to you and your situation. I often will say to fiction authors in particular, I don't know how you can build a platform for fiction very early, because I don't think you know what your voice is. You often don't know what your book is until you finished it, or even way after you finished it. I certainly find this. I write a book and then I figure out what it is later. Different for nonfiction. So it really just does depend. So you can tweet me at The Creative Pen. You can leave a comment on the show notes. And of course, you can always email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com. So today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark, and I will play a word from Robin in a minute. And it is a great segment because she has a promo code for you if you want to get your books out on Ingram Spark. And I am doing, as I mentioned, my backlist in hardback and large print through Ingram Spark. And I also do my normal paperbacks in order to get the wide publication, which you don't get if you just do KDP print. So lots of publishing right now. And also, just think about it. How many authors actually have their books in ebook, audiobook, paperback, large print, and hardback? Very few, actually, as I have found. But I'm one of them. I'm being a good publisher. So thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Joe Fontenot, B.W. Hyde, Ruth Amos, Z Wing Veto, which is it's just a lovely name, Charlotte E. English, Patricia McBride, Kate Swed, Sue Campbell, TLC, Claire L. Fishback, and S&J. Thank you to all the new patrons. I really appreciate it. And of course, if you are a patron, I sent out the November Q&A this week. I also sent out an email when all of this stuff with Amazon was happening in the week. It's probably the first time I've done that. I just felt like I wanted to save anyone the amount of pain I went through resubmitting all my books. So if you are a patron, you'll get all of that kind of stuff. You also get the backlist audio. So you have lots more learning that you can get if you just support the show for a couple of dollars a month. And you can do that at The Creative Pen. Oh no, not The Creative Pen. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/ The Creative Pen. Right, thank you, everybody. Here is a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hi, everyone. I'm Robin Cutler, director of Ingram Spark, an award-winning independent publishing platform that offers authors a way to publish and distribute print and ebooks to over 39,000 online and physical booksellers and libraries around the world. Joanna Penn includes us in her publishing journey when she uses Ingram Spark to print and distribute her books, and we are very excited to include the Creative Pen community in a very special offer. Until the 31st of March 2019, you can receive free title upload with Ingram Spark for your print and ebook in celebration of National Novel Writing Month, also known as NaNoWriMo. Use code NANO, that's NANO, in all caps when you upload your book into Ingram Spark to get free title upload and begin a world of possibilities. It's your content. We can help you do more with it. Get started today when you visit IngramSpark.com.
Today, I'm here again with Joseph Alexander. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, how you doing? You okay?
I'm good. Great to have you back on the show. Just a little introduction. Joseph is a musician and the author of over 40 books on playing the guitar. His latest book, which is more for authors and why he's back on the show, is Self-Published Millionaire, which is a pretty exciting title, which is an insight into his own publishing process and tips along the way, which is super exciting. So just to get started, for those people who might not have heard you from episode 342, which was last year, just give us a bit of an overview of your own writing and publishing journey.
Everything really came out of me struggling at music college and trying to find my own path through learning music. Finished college and I was teaching loads of private students, and I was writing down what I was teaching them, and I was ending up with these big piles of paper and resources that I was giving to them, and somebody kind of just mentioned to me that I should kind of put them into a book. So I did, and my first book was about trying to sort of find a easy route through learning jazz, and I sent it off along with three DVDs of audio examples to a London sort of music based publishing company, and they were like, "Oh, we really like the book. That's great, but that's absolutely commercially unviable for us. There's no way we can do three DVDs. You know, it's hard enough to sell guitar books at the moment anyway. You know, no one's buying these things." So I thought, "Okay, no worries." Didn't think about it anymore until somebody told me about it's CreateSpace and KDP. So I sort of didn't really think anything of it. Threw it up on Amazon with terrible cover and no real editing and things like that, and this was about 6 years ago now, so I was lucky and people found it, and a few things it started to sell, and I was a self-employed guitar teacher, so I thought, "Oh, that's nice, you know, there's a little bit of money coming in, ticking over in the background, and that'd be a nice pension." So I thought, I've got loads more stuff, so I wrote another one, and that really sort of kicked off, and so I ended up writing about 14 books in that sort of first year, or just using the things that I had around, and accidentally sort of developed this brand, Fundamental Changes, and here we are, like, sort of 6 years later. It's turned into a publishing company, and sort of it's just grown quite organically as I ran out of stuff to write about. I reached out to sort of friends and musicians that I knew, and they sort of saw that I had a brand that seemed viable, and we started off with a 50-50 deal. So they wrote the books, I edited them, I put them on Amazon, we split everything, and it's grown. I think we've got about 120 books now. So, and I think this year we've just published our 30th book this year. So it's just grown way beyond sort of what I ever could have conceived of. Quite sort of, you know, certainly the first year or so was by accident before I realized there was something quite viable there.
Wow. I love this story because it really shows like you taking something that you were doing in real life and then kind of turning it into a book and a product yeah. that people could then use themselves. And I find it hilarious that this publisher told you that it was hard enough to sell music books.
Yeah.
And now you're like just going for it. Do you think though, like you said, that of the time difference, it has digital downloads of audio also helped you, because you don't do CDs with your books, right? You have
I'm sure most people listening have had some experience with, you know, KDP, and yeah, there's absolutely no facility to include a CD with your book. You print it and that's what they do, and they do it really well. So, you know, going back then, my kind of thought was, well, I really want to include audio. You know, if you buy a guitar book or a music book these days, or, you know, at that time, everything came with a CD or a DVD. I was like, well, I want to include that. It's the 21st century. So I just started up a really simple, like, WordPress site and provided all the downloads for free. And it took me about a year and a half, I think, to realize, hang on a sec, why don't I just ask for everybody's email address before they download it? And, you know, by doing that, we've our mailing list's about to hit 60,000 people, I think. And they're all pretty much people who have bought books from us before. So that becomes like a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, now as the mailing list grows, we can launch new books to more people. You know, they get, you know, highly rated on Amazon, and then they download the audio and the word sort of spreads. So,
The mailing list, we did quite a deep dive into your mailing list in episode 342. I'm mentioning it again because it's incredibly valuable to learn about how Joseph has done this mailing list thing. And it's brilliant. It's absolute genius. But people can go back and listen to another show about that. But I did wanted to just revisit on print products, because, again, we hear so much about indie authors making money with ebooks. I mean, I guess it's logical in some form that a music book would be print, but what are some of the tips for gaining traction with a print product? Have you done specific marketing around print, or, you know, what are some tips on print specifically?
I would love to give you some really awesome insight here. I think, you know, the real answer is because it's nonfiction and because it's a manual, maybe even more so because it's music, because people want to have something physical on their guitar stand, you know, the music stand. If you think about the limitations of a Kindle, and they are great, you know, I read all the time on my Kindle, but if you've got notation, it's going to be that big. If you double tap it, yeah, you can fill the screen, but, you know, you can do that really one line at a time. So there is almost like a natural disadvantage to the Kindle for what we do, and a huge advantage for a paperback. I mean, we sort of print, what was that, you know, 8.5 by 11, you know, it's a big book and you can see the music really clearly on that. I think, yeah, unfortunately, in terms of marketing, a lot of it does just come down to the niche that we have, unfortunately.
Or fortunately, I think that is a tip. You have dominated. I mean, do you just dominate guitar books now?
There's more competition than there used to be, certainly. We've noticed recently that like AMS is probably getting a bit more expensive and there's more people out there doing it. But because of the amount that we sell, and the amount of authors that we're attracting, you know, like the book I just held up was a book by Jens Larsson, and we reached out to him because, you know, he's got 100,000. He's a great guitarist, first and foremost, it should be said. Like, he's great, but because he's great, he's got a huge sort of social media reach. So we're like, well, do you want us to work with you and put this book together? So we can continually bring in like new writers, which, you know, it's more of a publishing thing that maybe we'll get onto later. But due to the amount of books that we have, we don't feel that the competition is particularly an issue at the moment. But there is sort of a general trend of more people doing it, which is fine. You know, the more kind of the more people who are independently publishing well, I think for the industry as a whole, that's good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And just on the manual thing, I do think that other niches can learn from it because, like you said, these bigger books, for example, I've got workbooks. So nonfiction writers can do bigger workbooks that people want to buy as print products because then they can write in them, for example.
And I remember I was listening to one of your interviews a few weeks ago and you're talking about the large print stuff as well. I mean, that's a perfect example of being able to push people in the direction of print because, you know, the profit margins do seem to be higher on print for us than they are on Kindle. And, you know, saying that, I should say right from the off, we Kindle to paperback, actually, which, you know, I know talking to other self-published authors, that's very, very high, you know what I mean? Like really, really high. But, you know, we sell a lot of ebooks too, and you know, all the standard stuff that we talk about a lot in terms of AMS and building a list and, you know, getting your lead magnets and all this kind of thing. That stuff's still important, but I don't know if there's something specific other than kind of the nonfiction manual type thing that is really going to push people towards paperback rather than print, because that's just the world we live in.
Sorry, you just cut off on the percentage. I think you said the percentage that was print.
Yeah, we're about 50-50. Yeah, it's about 55-45 in favor of Kindle, but yeah, we still sell a lot of paperbacks compared to a lot of self-published authors. So
well, I think the tip is if you write nonfiction, get a print book, because I still am just gobsmacked when people don't do a print version, especially a print on demand. You don't have to do, I mean, I find it crazy that we're even talking about this at this point in history. But let's move on to scaling, because we're really talking about scaling a publishing business. And I know some people listening, like me particularly, I'm an example. I do not want to work with other authors. I've done some co-writing to me is different to kind of, like you're saying, you reached out with a strategic partnership and, you know, working with authors and publishing. So first of all, let's talk about the kind of the mindset. What is the difference between just being the author and then being a publisher, producer, you know, that kind of partnership? Like, how did you shift your thinking there?
It's difficult, and it's still difficult, the mindset, for me, because I love the writing side of it, and because it grew out of a partnership thing, really, where I was saying to really friends who could play guitar better than me, and I was saying, well, you write down what's in your head and we'll make that into the book for you, and we'll go 50-50. But I wasn't a writer when I started, and I in no way expect a musician to come in and be a writer. So it's great when they are, and we've had some books come in that have been fantastic. You know, we've barely needed to touch them in terms of editing. They've been brilliant. But there's books that have come in where people's first language isn't, say, English, and we've actually had to get really deep into the editing, you know, right from a developmental stage. So while the first sort of books that I published through Fundamental Changes, it was kind of just a case of like, I'm going to roll my sleeves up and rewrite this, and not really from like an ego point of view, like it has to be done my way. But what I found is that things at work, and there are certain things that you can explain a musical point quite clearly, and it's sort of the nuts and bolts of tuition. So that was sort of the early stages. And now what my company does is I work with people really from an early stage, and it's so, of course, we get manuscripts submitted, and sometimes they're great and we can just run with them. But when we're reaching out to another author, that mental shift is really, right, how am I going to work with them to get the most out of them, get the best book for them that's going to A, reflect what they do, B, be a great book, and C, something that we can market. So it comes down to almost coaching them. So the first thing is, okay, wait, let's get on the phone, let's get on Skype, let's talk this through. What's going to be your book plan? You know, once we've talked about what kind of titles or what they're going to be doing. So it would be making sure they've got a really solid plan that's been broken down into each, you know, maybe 10 rough chapter titles with 3 or 4 key points in them. then at that point, we'll give them all our house templates, our house style stuff, and, you know, like all the music files and things that they can use. And they'll check in after three pages and we'll do an edit on that.
Mm.
We'll send it back to them. We'll talk them through the edit. And then they'll go away and maybe write 10 pages and then, you know, get up to the first chapter. And by actually having more touch points with them, it means that by the time they've done that, their first one or two chapters, they're really in the mindset. Because we've had this happen once or twice, and it was my bad for not, you know, catching it, was I've spoken to people and they've just disappeared. I thought, oh, I'm not going to see them again. And they come back 6 months later with a manuscript, and it's just not publishable, and it's much more work to do that. So I guess the mindset thing is, well, we're going to have to work with authors to bring the most out of them and allocate our resources in terms of editing and time and covers and marketing and things usefully, because we're working with probably 10 writers at a time, you know, so it's quite busy.
Well, it's really interesting to hear you talk about it, because obviously, I mean, I say obviously, but I get a lot of people who ask me about publishing them, and I'm like, no, I don't run a publishing company. And I think there is a very different thing. I wonder whether your ability to do this actually comes out of your teaching and your coaching kind of lovely patience. You seem to have a lovely patience that I just can't imagine.
I don't think my girlfriend would say that.
Well, you sound like you have a lovely patience, but I was just thinking here, you know, my issue with this delegate, that almost for most authors listening, the problem is not running a publishing company. The problem is delegating anything. It's the mark of a successful indie author seems to be a little bit of control freakery around things. So I wonder how are you able to kind of relax that control freakery side of you? And that kind of moves into this hiring other people, because in the book you talk about hiring virtual assistants and assistants, say, in the Philippines, which a lot of authors need to take that first step of hiring an assistant in some form. So can you talk about that kind of letting go and how to find people to work with?
Yeah, it's quite hard. That sort of perfectionist thing is, I think, endemic in all writers, you know what I mean? It's just like, this book is part of me, you know, even a non-fiction guitar book. It's like, well, you know, this is my thoughts on music. This is how I play. This is a really personal thing. So any side of that. But I mean, there's sort of, there's different levels of it, really. You know, there's everything from, you know what, I need someone to just answer all the technical emails that I get every day. You know, if I had to answer every I can't download my audio kind of email, I'd never get. So there was like years where I did, and I would come in the morning and have like five emails or whatever, and after, you know, it'd be like, I can't get my audio. I'm like, right, you know what I mean? So and that would lead to a chain of 10 emails. But I can show somebody how to do that. It's quite a simple process when you know how. So at the sort of most easy stuff to give away, like technical support and, you know, running a mailing list or anything that's sort of not directly writing based, that's the kind of stuff that I think people should be trying to give away. If there's a budget there, of course, you know, and that's definitely a concern, because it's all very well to say, you know, well, just pay someone to do it. But actually, you know, that's not realistic for the vast majority of people. And it was only after I've been doing this for a few years where it's like, actually, you know what, where is my time best spent? So if you do have a budget for it, any kind of jobs that are repetitive, samey and distract you from writing or marketing your book, I think should go. But talking about finding people, you know, that is going to be the public face of you or your business, that's more difficult. We used Upwork as much as possible, because we found that their kind of platform's really reliable. What we'll do is we'll probably work with somebody for, you know, a month or so, and if it's going really well, we'll try and pull them away from Upwork, and we'll use like TransferWise or PayPal to just pay them directly, because Upwork's quite an expensive platform. In terms of hiring people, it if you put a job up for, you know, virtual assistant, you could potentially get thousands of replies for it, which is quite daunting. So what we do is we hide little questions in there, like a bit sneaky, you know, like it'll be blah, 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 looking for a VA, you need to do this, you need to do this, what's your favorite color, la, 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 la. And they could be the best person in the world, but if they've missed that question, it's just like, you're gone. Because unfortunately, you want somebody who's got that bit of attention to detail. Another thing that I was living in Thailand when I first started doing it, I'd be like, okay, so I need you to, what's the cheapest flight from Phuket to Manchester on the 17th of November or whatever. And so just little things in there. The final line would always be, you know, send your reply to this job posting with the words "I am a human," because there's a load of like bots on there as well. So all these little things are going to help whittle it down. Working up now, I tried working with a few editors on Upwork for my stuff, and because again my stuff's fairly niche and editors are quite expensive, you know, that for me was more problematic to do that. So genuinely I did most of the editing myself on other people's work. However, we've just started, well, you know, been doing it about 10 months, we've been working with a publishing services company in the UK who I just met a guy at a guitar retreat, and he happened to be a writer, an editor. He had, you know, great resources when it came to doing covers. And I was just like, well, we'll just pay you a retainer. And now it's just like the book comes in, I'll read it, I'll probably do a basic edit on it, and that goes off to his company now, and then that will come back. So that's one of the resources, being able to sort of crank up the amount of books that we're putting out. But yeah, I mean, they're sort of a very professional company, and it depends where you are as well. Of course, you know, I think, you know, we talk about this quite a lot, and I know you talk about it too, is that you need to have an editor, if you need to have a front cover designer, if you can't, you know, if you can't do it yourself. I think don't want to put words into your mouth there.
And I think this is the almost the issue. I mean, I've always had a problem with self-publishing. And right. You know, I mean, evidently you're not self-publishing either. I mean, you might have at the very, very beginning, but in terms of using professional designers, professional covers, professional editing, professional formatting. I mean, I love your style guides. I remember a few years back, I was contacted around that Dummies series. And they, you know, their stuff all has a very specific style guide, design guide. And I was just like, I just can't work within that type of structure. But I can see why it's so important for the brand.
I think so. It's just designed to make our lives easier at the other end. But there is exactly what you said. Come to us and they want us to publish their book. And we're like, okay. And we just smash them over the head with this like massive like how to write guide. Then nothing's ever going to get done because they're too scared to write anything. So what we do get to do, because we're quite small and really chilled out, and we're working with musicians, and like we don't work with anyone that we don't want to work with because, you know, like life's too short, you know what I mean? We want to work with people where we're good for them, they're good for us, and we want it to be chill. Is that I have a read through this style guide. If it's not 100% in that, that's fine. Don't worry. Like we're here to edit, like we're a publishing company. We're here to edit and do all this stuff for you. It helps us if you can do that. So please do have a look at it. And there are some super important things in terms of them producing images and getting them into the documents in the correct way and all this kind of thing. But aside from that, just write. And that's why we have all these early touch points. It's like, you know, a particular bugbear of mine, certainly in nonfiction, this is probably quite a good tip for anyone, is people starting off sentences was with, okay, guys, in the next example, what we are going to be looking at is, and it's sort of a whole sentence between, you know, and you don't want to be, there's a balance, sure, but it's kind of like, okay, example 3C shows you how to use this arpeggio over this chord or whatever. And it's like straight to the point and without all this preamble, because if you're explaining something that is quite complicated anyway, you kind of want to get to the point. So I know it's sort of a little random aside, but writing, telling people what they want to hear without trying to be sort of too polite and too sort of, you know, English about it.
I think that's true. I mean, even my own nonfiction books have the covers are all have a certain look. Oh, some of them are behind me on the video. Oh, there they are. But also the use of subheads, as you say, I mean, I would have used a subhead there. You know, you don't have to go, okay, here's what we're going to look at. You just need what you're going to look at, you know, like a subhead or something.
Clear from context.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But there is voice in nonfiction as well and a brand. I like that. So I want to come back to Upwork. Because I'm really interested in your translation project, because we talked about this last time in that it's much easier for you to do translation because the number of words is actually less than, say, a novel. And also because it's nonfiction, it's easier. But can you talk about how you're doing the translation with the books and how you're ensuring quality?
Essentially, the short answer to that is we use two translators. And so that they'll both be working on different books, but then they'll swap work. So it's kind of almost like that test at school, like, okay, everybody should swap with your person that's sitting next to you and check it over, so they can flag it up if there is an issue. And like, I don't speak Portuguese and my Spanish is pretty terrible, so I can't check that. So really it is a case of trusting the translators to do a good job on it, but also by that kind of level of redundancy by having them swap books and, you know, just paying them a little, you know, for a few extra hours of going through it. If anything sort of gets flagged up, it's either going to come down to quite often me not being clear in what I originally wrote, or just a mistake. And I can't think of any point where any of the translators have been particularly precious about their work, because it's not, you know, the thing that absolutely blows my mind is that, you know, I can't remember his name, the guy that translates Haruki Murakami, because that's such beautiful, beautiful writing, and it's, you know, it's incredible literature. To capture that tone of his level of sort of esoteric novel, for me, that's just, you know, that's such an art. Whereas again, like, we write nonfiction guides, so it is kind of like, do this, don't do this, which sort of it is pretty, you know, it's quite straightforward.
Did you find them on Upwork?
Yeah. It was kind of a crazy one, because like, I've done things where I've had to audition musicians on Upwork, but I've never had to audition their like playing, their musical knowledge and their translation skills as well. So, I mean, I traveled a lot and I'm still trying to get out of the country as often as I can. And through doing that, I'm very fortunate that I've got friends who speak fluent Portuguese, fluent Spanish, fluent German. So when I originally hired the people that we were working with, and again, Upwork, so we probably got about 20 applications for each language. I was like, okay, I'm sorry, we do need you to do a test, obviously. If you need a few dollars for doing this, that's fine. But I just sort of pulled out a particularly, you know, one of the more intricate pages of teaching that we'd got in one of the books. I forget which one it was. And said, right, can you just translate this? And so we ended up with, you know, 20 different translations. And I just gave them to friends. And they were just like, this guy definitely, this lady definitely, and this one. So I don't know how you sort of go about that if you didn't have sort of trusted people who spoke other language. But, you know, to be honest with you, there must be editors out there who speak other languages on Upwork. So you might have to just kind of tweak that process a little bit until you can find someone that you really trust, or, you know, get a Spanish teacher for an hour or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about I think one of the massive things that I hope people are getting from this is the treating your business like a business, and you're paying professionals to do work for you. And this is paid work. This is so I see so much in the indie author community, the sort of how can we do more stuff for free? Whereas I think the creation of intellectual property assets, which is the basis of our business, you know, you have to respect professionals, and you know, you get what you pay for. So this is what I'm seeing. Now, when I got into translations too early, this is always my problem. And also I did fiction, big mistake, because of the, like you say, the difference in fiction and nonfiction. So, but one of the biggest stumbling blocks I had was the marketing or in another language. So for example, now in English language books, we have Amazon ads, AMS, we have Facebook, we can do emails because we speak English. So how are you doing marketing in other languages?
Well, it's really, for us, it's really simple. We're just running AMS.
On what? But it's not available everywhere, right?
No, but we do sell Spanish books in America.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately for us, okay, so we managed to really badger the Create Space expanded distribution services and kind of managed to get them to place our books in Brazil, like paperback. And I think it was Amazon printing. I'm not quite sure how it was going on, but it was sort of, I probably shouldn't say this, but it was a bit of a chat after the London Book Fair. Can't really talk about it. But he was like, there is a way of doing this, and so we managed to do that. But now Create Space is gone. We've totally lost our Brazil, which is annoying. But there is Spain, you know, and I think there's Portugal as well.
But they don't have AMS.
They don't have AMS. No, but I think again, It sort of pains me to say, but I think we're just quite lucky because, you know, if people are searching for guitarra, you know, in Spain, then like we're going to pop up. We're not doing novels. So again,
keywords, basically.
Keywords. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. You can do your manual keywords on that. But we do sell, we've got like our AMS ads for our Spanish books in the US, like they're running at about 1.94% cost of sale. They're ridiculous because there's so few people searching for it. But when they do and they find it, then, you know, chances are if they like the look of it, they're going to buy it. So, yeah, I do feel lucky that I do what I do, because saying that, it would work for any nonfiction thing, any nonfiction genre, but it kind of comes back to book titles quite a lot as well. Mm-hmm. Like our book titles are so sort of SEO friendly, you know, to the point of being boring, but findable. And I kind of think, well, what are people searching for when they're looking for this book? And like you sort of do it as well. Like, I mean, How to Write Nonfiction, what a brilliant, you know, what a brilliant book title.
Yes, so boring and yet so correct.
Exactly. It's not even boring. It's just, you know, just does what it says on the tin. And so if you have that book translated into German, then people will be searching for that in German, and you won't need to, like, we get quite a lot of organic sales on that stuff because I guess that market's not necessarily as developed yet as it is, you know, in America and the UK. There's so much noise, of course there is, and especially for fiction, but I think that market is still developing in other parts of the world. And if you have your nonfiction stuff, I think what you'll find is that your organic sales will probably, no promises, man, don't come after me. No, we bump into each other like every now and again at events. You told me that. My feeling is that, you know, that if you've got the reputation that you've got, people will be looking for your books in German and Spanish and Portuguese. But the other side of it is, and this is what you weigh up, is that actually, well, a lot of people in those countries will speak English. Are they just going to buy your book in English? You know,
we're so lucky to publish in English first. I mean, I acknowledge how lucky we are being able to do it this way. But I do think that there is a growing, I certainly think the Spanish language is particularly interesting because of the American Spanish speaking. I think Spanish is, well, it may even be the largest spoken language in America within a generation or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite possible. Yeah, I mean, it's been great. Like, I'm probably as bad as anyone else, but I do check in, you know, like into my, you know, like it's normally a lot of my books are in the top 100 for guitar. So I kind of do have a little check in every day to see what's going on. And, you know, maybe a few times a month, I'll see a Spanish language book in the top 100 guitar, you know, like one of ours, fortunately. But it just shows that people are looking for that. Yeah, but, you know, again, it's not something I can necessarily shed light on for novels and things.
I find it really fascinating. It's every time I talk to you, you know, when I see you at events or whatever, and I'm just like, oh, I really must do a nonfiction book, and then I move off and do something else. But I do want to come on to something which is really interesting, I think, in the book, which is this balancing of lifestyle and money. Because I think when we, like you said, you were, you know, music teacher, and then you started making a bit of money, and then you started making a lot more money, and then you've scaled your business. And, you know, now we could be in world domination mode in so many ways. But you talk about kind of breaking under the strain. And I want us to acknowledge how hard you've worked, but also that you've reflected on what you want and how to have a healthy, sustainable life. So can you talk a bit about how that happened and kind of how you're dealing with it?
I spent a lot of time alone in front of a computer. And I've been with my girlfriend for 8 years, and I've got friends and my dogs and things like that. What I found was, I don't, it is such a difficult thing to put into words, and it is something that I want to be really honest about, because, you know, it's not something that I'm ashamed of, and my suspicion is there, because writing can be quite a lonely pursuit. I think the first thing to say is that, and genuinely, this has never been about money. And I think it's important to say that, because I think if it was, I don't think I would have done quite so well. I think you start making decisions like about what you're producing and why you're producing it. And like, I can think of about 3 or 4 books I can just do right now and that'd be like super successful, but I don't know. I won't go down that route, but it's not about that. It's about kind of helping people learn to play guitar. And I don't want to sort of make it sound like, you know, it's just being like doing this stuff just to make more and more money, because like after about 2 years, I sort of had enough to kind of like, yeah, cool, I can go and live in Thailand for a year quite comfortably and keep doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And it's really been, it's more out of interest, and it's more out of like this kind of challenge of doing it. You know what I mean? Like you hear about a lot of people who sort of really like they make a great big company and they sell it and they've got all this money, and it's like, right, well, what's the next thing? Because it's not about the cash. It's about the taking the next step. It's about keeping your mind occupied. It's about keeping, you know, having something to focus on and having meaning in what you do. So that's sort of been the driver. But because of that, and partly, you know, it's not Amazon's fault, certainly, but partly because, you know, it's a bit of a, it could be a bit of a precarious kind of existence. I don't know if you know, other people relate to this, but there's a kind of, well, what if it, you know, we get shut down, and I know people have sort of had all their accounts closed or whatever, and things can just seem to stop. So I think one of the reasons I was working so hard was to try and build in a bit of redundancy, you know, like, well, you know, what else, how I can sort of, but anyway, the point being that I was just working harder and harder and harder and sort of spending less and less time coming out of the room. And it ended up sort of being like kind of close to having a bit of a breakdown with it. it was just very lonely. I think that was the thing. I was spending too much time in my own head and just like turning down going out and seeing friends just so I could focus on the next thing and get that done. I remember like saying to Tim, who runs the author services company I work with, and I was like, you know, like most times if you work at a trad publishing company, they'll like have a big book launch and a big party for everyone and they'll go out and go, cool, mission accomplished, bit of downtime, and then start the next one. For me, it's just like, right, that one's done, like what's next? And I think there was no real payoff and it was all hard work with no real thing. So it got to last November and I was like at the point of walking away. And what happened, I was writing this book with Martin Taylor, who's a great jazz guitarist. He invited me up to Scotland to go on his guitar retreat. I met Tim, and again, he's got this service company, and now we sort of speak every day on the phone. And having someone to work with who completely understands it, and that's made the biggest difference. So I know it's sort of a big, long, rambly answer. I don't know if I've said anything there, but...
Well, I think you've said that you need to have a support network. You can't just be in your room on your own. And, you know, and also that perhaps celebrating success and taking time off is a good idea.
I think recognizing it. I think that's something I've always been bad at, is just recognizing success, because still people come to me, it's like, oh, it's amazing what you've done. It's incredible. For me, it's just something that I've done. It's not like, yeah, that's great, man, I've done all this. It's just like, oh, well, it's just what I do. And I feel very grateful that it's gone well. And I feel very grateful that my books are selling, but it's just kind of who I am and what I do. It's not anything to sort of shout about, really. And that's kind of really what the new book's about. Even, you know, like I did, so unsure about the title of it, and it's not necessarily what I want to be known for, you know what I mean? It's got a whole different connotation, and just a few people said it was a great title, so we've gone with it. But the whole book really is been about my experience of everything that I've done step by step, you know, and when I've sort of gone down a wrong path, we tried to sort of mention that and why I've done what I've done and things. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that support network thing is really important. The Facebook groups and things are brilliant. Knowing other people are out there are brilliant, but I would say try and take that offline as well. If there's someone you're chatting to online about your books, like pick up the phone, go and see them if you can. Of course, it's a big world, but having people around you that can support you and understand what you're doing and the sort of minutiae of writing that get it, and being able to just vent, you know, take it in turns for half an hour or whatever to let it off your chest and go outside and see people. But yeah, I mean, you talk about sort of balancing money and work. The money's just not important. It's just sort of there.
I think the money's important to a point, but when you have reached whatever, you know, is, because some people are still struggling to make much at all. But I agree with you. There's a point where it's less about the money and more about meaning and what you want to achieve in the bigger sense.
Yeah. For me, like, not going on a big, you know, sob story, but like I pretty much like grew up with nothing, you know, like we didn't have anything. For me, being rich is being able to like pay for the groceries and pay the gas bill without actually having to look at the bank account. Beyond that, I'm not really, you know, it's great and it sounds really ungrateful. It's not, you know, it's cool. Like, you know, it's very, you know, it's, like you say, it is important to have the money. It's a job. Of course it is. You know, you want, and it's a measure of success in a way. One measure of success, certainly. But yeah, it comes down to meaning and vocation. And
we can travel more if we make more money.
Yeah, we can do cool shit. You know what I mean? That's what it comes down to, doesn't it?
It is, absolutely. And you can give it all away if you want. I mean, this is what's the point. So I'm really glad we had this chat because it's been helpful to me. And I mean, I always find it so interesting when authors transition from being an author to being a publisher. And there's been some, you know, there's some pretty big names who are now indies who've now moved across to publisher.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating. But tell people where they can find you and the book and everything you do online.
Yeah, I'm hoping to launch the book, I think, on the 17th of November. If you like guitar books and all things musical, it's fundamental-changes.com. Self-published millionaire, like I say, launching on the 17th of November, all being well. And that's, we're going to go wide on that one. We're going to be paperback, you know, Kindle, Kobo, you name it, iBooks is going to be out there for everything, and we're hopefully going to be running quite a big campaign for that as well. But I think it is genuinely a useful book for anyone who wants to get into writing, but I think especially for people who are writing and want to know how to take the next step in terms of marketing and getting your book seen and you know, getting a great cover done and all that kind of thing, you know, that there's advice in there that I've not really held anything back. I've tried not to hold anything back, just everything that I've done over the last sort of 6 years. And also very quickly, because I know we need to wrap up, but my co-writer, Tim, he's had 20 years in the publishing industry. He's done loads of ghostwriting. He's been involved in the production of around about 1,000 like traditionally published books and some really big ones. And so throughout the book, yeah, there's my perspective as an indie author. But then there's his perspective. It's like, actually, you know what? If you want to do this as a trad publisher, you know, as a trad writer, a trad author, then, you know, this is kind of what the publishing house or your agent would want to see, kind of thing. So, you know, we try to not dilute it too much, but definitely sort of think about people who want to either go indie or who do want to go trad with it as well.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Joseph. That was great.
That's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Joseph today and that it gave you some new ideas for your own author business. Next week, I'm talking about plot gardening with Chris Fox. I'll also be asking him about his updated version of Right to Market. And what's lovely is Chris is now really blending the craft side with the business. And we'll probably talk about ads as well, why ever not. So look out for that next week. So happy writing week and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.